Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Seeking What They Saw, a conversation on Seventh-day Adventism. I'm one of your hosts, Anthony Leiter, and let's get this ball rolling. Welcome, once again, to the Opinion Zone, where opinions are the king of everything. And we can say whatever we want without any repercussions, because everything we're about to say is our opinion and is not representative of anything else said by anyone or believed by anyone anywhere.
That's very, very comprehensive of us.
You just better hope that no one else believes this, or we're going to get sued.
Yeah, exactly. So, So Adventism is kind of a mess right now.
We're in a pickle. We're in a real pickle.
That's one way to put it.
It's a gherkin. Not a gherkin. It's a dill. It's a big dill.
Yeah. It's like we're in the pickle jar.
Yeah.
Drowning in the juices.
drowning in the pickle juices. For anyone who doesn't know, pretty much Adventism is going through a crisis of control. I think that's what it would really be at this point, a crisis of control where, The crisis is that the General Conference, the kind of highest governing body of everything, is seeking to enforce compliance on out of compliant entities within the SDA body. So, like unions who are ordaining women, things like that, they want to enforce compliance of that. So that's the pickle we're in. They want to do that.
It's a pickle.
It's a real pickle.
It's a pickle indeed. Yeah, I think. It's been quite a crazy time for us down here in Southeastern, namely because our president is female.
Because you guys are literally the worst.
We are the problem children, I guess we could say.
You know what's crazy though, and this will probably hit harder as we talk, but the Southeastern California Conference is one of like the biggest entities within the North American division, let alone the Adventist Church. Especially when it comes to money, right?
Yeah.
So if if we even back up a bit too, so this whole story didn't even start last month when this whole thing went down. I mean, you could argue that this begins with 2015 when the General Conference session met and made the choice on. The main topic. There are other topics, but the main topic is women's ordination, voting not to allow conferences or unions to decide how to interpret the biblical passages and just what to do in those situations.
Which was really intriguing too, because there was that committee that was supposed to see about ordination. They were studying ordination, and it came out inconclusive in essence, right? And I think wasn't the recommendation that entities should divide or decide for themselves what they did.
There were three positions that were voted on. The first, I don't remember the order, I just know that one was for I think allowing it, and then one is not allowing it, and then the third option was just allowing individual conferences, or I don't know what level of church government structure it was, but allowing either the division or conference or union to decide based on the culture and what was considered acceptable to
It was divisions. Yeah.
So like NAD and okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where it started.
Yeah. And then there was this whole bust up later on where the GC was trying to pass this, this thing at, was it the annual council or something last year? They were trying to pass a document?
I feel like, yeah.
I honestly don't remember.
My Adventist politics memory is failing me.
Well, in essence, it was that the GC wanted to pass this document. There was a bunch of people against it. It had been like kind of, there was some little political issues with it, with how it came out, the timing of it, and all these different things. And so that was a big deal. And the reality is that that was kind of one of the big moments where the GC started to rear its head of like, we want to control things because we sense that things are out of compliance and we want to make sure that they're not in the future. And that really became, I think, a catalyst. I think it was annual council last year. It was just this moment where it's like, uh-oh, what are we in for here?
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like the formation of compliance committee, or five of them actually, implies, I mean, let's state the obvious, it implies that there are conferences, unions, divisions that are out of compliance. So right. Just so people are aware, there are five that have been formed by the General Conference. One is, the first one is General Conference Core Policies. The second one, Doctrines, Policies, Statements, Guidelines for Church Organizations, Institutions, Teaching, Creation, Origins. So I guess that basically if you summed up the creation. Second one, it's like creation. The third one is on homosexuality, guidelines regarding homosexuality. Number four is distinctive beliefs of the SDA Church. And then the final one is on ordination. Those are the five. So that basically implies that the General Conference feels that they have to create this committee.
Yeah.
Because it's at that point where people are out of compliance.
I'm interested in talking about that. Like, the idea of being out of compliance in a church setting is really interesting to me, because I just think that's an interesting idea, that the church is not only what we look at biblically, a community of believers coming together to, you know, further the cause of Christ, but also in our case, it's like an organization and an entity that needs to control and make sure that its sub-entities, its subgroups, are accomplishing the goal that they have stated they want to accomplish. And I just think that's an interesting idea. I feel like that's, I wonder, when we look at the scriptures, do we see the same sorts of shenanigans happening with the early church?
There was.
We definitely do.
Yeah, if you go back to Acts, you know, there's this whole idea that, hey, Gentiles aren't welcome here. Or if they are, they need to follow Jewish law. And then, you know, there's this whole like revealing that the Spirit comes on Gentiles, you know, and
right.
What are you going to do with that? And so they have this whole conversation about it, and they decide we're going to, in essence, you know, we're going to support it. And it's really intriguing because it kind of states there always are going to be disagreements. There's going to be these weird moments where our beliefs from the past come up against our beliefs in the present. And what do you do with that? And what is the responsible, you know, way to move forward? I think that's a huge key issue right now, is what is the responsible way to move forward when we disagree? And now we're in this entity that in essence is supposed to control, I guess at its very best is not intended to control, but is intended to kind of help the church, or help the people in other countries who are missionaries and stuff like that, help them, you know, spread the gospel. But now we're in an entity where it's like, as soon as you say we're the Adventist church, then there has to be some sort of like, this is what it means to be Adventist. Now we're coming up against some stuff that it's like, well, the Bible says that women can't speak in church, you know. Well, then how do we take the Bible, you know? So now we're coming up against some of these issues that are really key and kind of messing with everybody.
Everything's interconnected, which is great, which is, I think, what we found as we've talked more on this podcast, and also just, you know, as we hang out and talk, that everything within Adventism is interconnected, like culturally, theologically, like missionally, and practically. Everything is interconnected. And if you like pull one of the dominoes out, it almost seems like everything just like crashes
and it comes down to
threatened, at least.
Does it have to be that way? And I think a lot of people are afraid of that kind of a house of cards sort of thing, that if you pull one of the things out of the cards out of the bottom of it, if we say that women can be ordained, you know, then the Bible then is all of a sudden not literal and means you can do whatever you want with it, and therefore everything else crumbles. And so that's kind of the fear, this almost snowball effect, or, you know, the snowball that kind of turns into a massive ball of snow going down the hill. I think people are afraid of that if we allow women to be ordained. So then it's interesting, because now the GC is in this position of, well, what's our role? You know, do we control this? Do we enforce compliance? Do we kick people out if they, you know, disagree on these doctrines but not on these ones? You know, like, it's kind of crazy how, like, and I have to admit, I have to say this, it would be hard to be in the GC's position. I want to have that level of sympathy for that, because as a leader, you know, it's not easy when you have to make some of these decisions. So I want to say at least that.
I mean, especially you imagine trying to speak to every division, and there's so much difference and variation. And I think, you know, we think it's one of the most beautiful things about our church is how culturally diverse we are. but there's a lot of responsibility with that, knowing how to, you know, be diplomatic and reasonable, mm-hmm. but also be firm in belief. And the problems we have now, Ellen White didn't really have during her time. Yeah. And so, you know, it started becoming more of a global church, you know, back then. But
she did have a problem then. 1888, right? Where Jones and Wagner, they come That's and true. They say righteousness by faith, and the GC says no. Mm. They, in essence, enforce that. So Ellen White did have that, and she was fighting against the GC. This is what I find so interesting, is That's the true. GC will literally use her quotes as ways to say, don't fight us, when she was literally like railing yeah, against kind of this kingly power in the General Conference, who was, in essence, squashing the message of Jesus Christ. So, mm-hmm. so she did have those. I'm not so much challenging. He's just saying, like, she did have those issues in her time, and she was not on the side of the GC. She was on the side of the GC when they began to organize, but once the GC began to like exercise some of its overlording, in essence, she was totally against it.
That's
yeah. So the question is, and I think everyone can agree, whatever side you're on, whether you think the GC is doing the right thing or whether or not. I mean, let's just be real. The vote that was done by many of the leaders at the annual council, it shows that the church is very divided. It was something like 184 to 127. I don't know. It's not the exact number, but it's something
like
that.
It's like a 2/3 majority. Yeah.
So sure, it's a majority, but that's a lot of people that disagree. And also you have, of course, the vote for women's ordination, where although the majority again voted against it, it wasn't a vast majority.
Yeah.
And so I think the ratios are actually pretty similar. I don't know if you broke them down how close they would be, but
seems like the same people.
I think what we need to recognize is our church is divided on this issue, and not just this issue. Obviously, the General Conference, by putting together five committees, recognizes that there are five areas that they're concerned about.
Right.
I think that's where
we're at. Yeah, that's really intriguing. I had never really looked into what the five were covering, and so you reading those out was kind of intriguing because. Yeah, they are kind of sticking points in the last few years. And let me just name drop Ted Wilson here, the GC president. Like, those are some of the things that he has been really focused on, you know, like creation and whether it's six literal days, you know, if it could have been maybe something different, you know, that's a sticking point for him and for the GC people.
Wasn't there in maybe 2015, I think, where he released that statement that was like, if you have Adventist professional friends who don't believe in a 6-day creation, or, you know, like a 7-day creation week, then you should not be their friend. You should basically.
I don't remember that. I do remember him saying.
I don't think it was friend. I think the way it said it is, you know, it's
you shouldn't be an Adventist professional if you hold those beliefs.
Yeah, like it's not Adventist. Essentially, right, I think I think more of it is basically it's not Adventist to believe in anything but a 6 literal day. Creation. Right. And yeah, I mean, that was definitely interesting. I remember that came out during college and I remember, you know, I think what I noticed is it made me naturally want to actually understand, what do I really believe and how do I know I believe this?
Yeah.
And how come there's so much division about this topic if it's, you know, so.
Yeah. And it's weird because of that. And then of course, homosexuality has been a huge point just in Christianity in general. So that maybe is more understandable. But then ordination, and there was two others, wasn't there?
The other ones are kind of general. So some of them are pretty some of them are general. Like one is just core policies.
Yeah.
One is just like the other one is just like doctrines, policy statements.
Well, that's interesting because those are the kind of two areas you would expect. Right? You would expect, we kind of have our core principles and our Adventist distinctive doctrines. That's what makes us Adventist. But then you add on, you tack on three other things, right? Mm-hmm. Which is really intriguing to me. Like creation is one, and then homosexuality and ordination. That really says something about what they're focused on at that level, right? Those are the three main issues that they see as maybe fragmenting the church in the future, which is really intriguing because it almost feels like their actions are more fragmenting the church than those issues are.
Yeah,
that's the interesting thing is I think what I was actually getting back to is what I think many people can agree on is the way this has been handled. And again, as you said, Jesse, I can't imagine being at that level of of leadership and trying to have actions in a think of what I'm doing in a way that's smart and appeals to everyone to truly unify mm-hmm. together in thought. And I think that's really difficult. But I think people agree that this has not really helped the situation on either side. Yeah. I don't feel like people are at peace about this, at least from what I've seen. And based on the articles that have been coming out on all these different Adventist news outlets, I don't think anyone is under the impression that this is creating solutions for anyone. Mm-hmm. Because there's either people in favor of what the GC is doing and they're basically doing damage control with their articles, or you have prominent Adventists that are speaking out against it. And I mean, we're talking bigger names that you don't really hear too often speaking in a controversial manner. People like George Knight, even Ty Gibson speaking out against what the church, how it has handled this situation. So it's just interesting to see how this has been perceived.
Sorry, Sean, I don't want to derail our conversation. I just wanted to go back and actually read the quote because you guys know that I tend to speak off the just kind of off the dome, just sort of speaking randomly.
Off the dome.
The Tacoma Dome.
right off the Tacoma. Wow, I forgot about the Tacoma Dome. As far as the Ted Wilson quote, I wanted to get it right. He just said, and you were right, he said, it's vital that every employee, whether administrator, pastor, teacher, should strongly believe in the fundamental understanding of creation as the Adventist Church enunciates it. To continue to be employed and hold a view other than that would not be compatible to the very reason for the existence of the church. So you're totally right.
Yeah, so it's in essence, you shouldn't be a professional if you believe something different.
Right, you shouldn't call yourself an Adventist.
Yeah, which is a huge statement, right?
That's crazy.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's fair to say that he would apply that quote to all of the five compliance issues. I almost feel like it would, right, based on what they're trying to do now.
That's exactly what they are, though, Sean. Like they're literally saying, if you aren't compliant, then we're going to take action against you. Right. And if you don't come back into compliance, then we will take further action against you. So it literally is saying you shouldn't be Adventist if...
So here's where I'm curious, and I don't know if this is even worth getting into a discussion about, but because it could just get into speculation. But what does that word action mean?
Favorite.
When it comes to action against, you know, we've heard that over and over again, but I don't know what that means. I don't know what those compliance committees plan to do. I've only heard speculation. I've heard things like tithe money being used in different ways or allocated differently. I've heard of, you know, removal of certain positions, but I just don't know what the actual plan is. And I think that's why people are so uncomfortable, is this comes across as kind of secretive and people are just a little concerned on, well, if these are the five things that are now going to be non-negotiables in Adventism, what does that look like in action?
Mm. Yeah. And I think, I mean, so speaking from being in Southeastern, La Sierra University Church is literally right across the street from the conference office. I think I would say, like, a lot of the language and rhetoric being used around here and around these circles and spaces is, we won't know until we know. And we're just going to continue to just do local mission and community and church and not really stress about it. So it's really weird. It's an interesting atmosphere down here because there's not really a lot of stress and anxiety. At least it feels like, at least in my office and in the office across the street, I think a lot of people aren't really super stressed about it. People are just going about their, you know, just local mission, which is pretty cool. It's a cool, I think.
Yeah. Reality. So it's interesting. Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Jesse.
So just to answer what you're saying, Sean, when it comes to actions, I think, in essence, it's this, that they can reprimand the leaders of specific entities. And if they do that, I don't know. It's funny because you read the document and you're like, oh, okay, cool. Like, they've been publicly warned, in essence. Okay, so what, right? And then the next thing is... oh, shoot. And I can't even remember the second thing. But in essence, there's these two, I'll have to find it. There's these two very specific actions that they can take. And both of the actions, you're sitting there like, so what would this change? And the weird part, too, is that they can, in essence, reprimand, let's say, the head of a division that has a non-compliant union in it, right? So there's the GC, then there's the divisions, which are different continents in essence, and then there's the unions, which are subdivisions of those continents. So if there's a non-compliant union, they could say to the division president, we're reprimanding you, even if he's innocent. But it, in essence, it would put extra pressure on that division president to, you know, force compliance within the union. And so it's kind of interesting because it all comes down to, in essence, trying to force, I used this word earlier, force compliance as opposed to kind of welcoming people into a body. And so Mark Finley, I want to read this for a second.
Please
Mark Finley, he's one of the evangelists who has, you know, brought a lot of people into the Adventist Church, and awesome. But he is part of the General Conference. I think he's part of one of the committees. He wrote an article called "Myths and or Mystifying Myths," and he's, you know, talking about like, oh yeah, there's a lot of myths going around about this. And he in essence supports the document, and he says, myth number one: the document is an overreach by the General Conference to centralize power. And he says, the fact is, the document actually states planning for and ensuring compliance shall initially be entrusted to the entity closest to the matter. This is really weird to me because, and I hate this so much because here's this guy who I had a lot of respect for, and I'm just like, dude, you can't do this. Because what he's in essence saying is like, yeah, there's this myth going around that the GC is trying to overreach. And then he says, the fact is, the document is actually set up so that the entity closest to the noncompliance will deal with it. And I'm like, yeah, but here's the problem, and here's where you're totally lying, is the problem is that let's say the Southeastern California Conference is out of compliance, and the Pacific Union's like, yeah, we're with them, right? And the NAD is like, right. Yeah, we're with them. And then so what? This is not about like, oh yeah, it's supposed to be the entity closest to them, because the GC fully knows that the entities closest to these non-compliant ones are just as non-compliant. So this is all a way for them to be able to, in essence, reach to that little non-compliant one that's like four layers away from them. That's a way for them to get there, you know, but it's all couched in, but then the Pacific Union would first deal with it. You're like, Mark, stop. Like, that's literally like you're talking out the side of your mouth right now. And it makes me angry, not so much because I am actually like, oh no, what's going to happen. It makes me angry because they're in essence trying to cover it up.
It's gross.
And I'm like, just be honest about it. At least like, don't, we're not idiots. Stop it.
I think at best with this article, because I've read through it as well.
Is this the one on Fulcrum 7?
Yeah, it's
this,
on there.
Well, it originally is from Adventist.org. Adventist News Network reported on it, and I don't know where it originated from. I see it on multiple Adventist
mediums. It's on Adventist.org, so.
So, it's official. Is at the very best, this doesn't solve anything. So I guess it can give you a bit more to think about, I guess. But even, let's say that what he's writing, he wrote, I think, 6 myths and facts here. If it totally justifies what
seven.
So if it totally justifies what the GC is doing, and it's all biblical or under the church manual or whatever it may be, then it doesn't really solve the problem. And it doesn't actually change. It won't change anything. That means that these compliance committees will give a stern rebuke, like you said, Jesse, but it won't make a difference. That's why the root of my question was, what action is going to be taken? And because it comes across to me that now they plan to go further than simply giving a stern warning or a shame on you to the NAD. But the thing is, the NAD's responded like, our goal is still to get 1,000 female pastors as soon as possible. Basically, that
was just like a big middle finger to the GC.
Well, I mean, it's just like our mission is still the same. There was no wavering at all. And so, but I haven't, I don't know. I mean, we're recording this in early November. I haven't seen any update of a response by the GC sternly rebuking that statement, or there have been other statements from other unions saying the same thing all around the world.
Yeah.
Essentially, like, this is our mission, and that includes allowing female pastors to lead.
I'm part of a conference that they in essence said that ordination and commissioned are the same, can do the same thing in the conference. So commission is kind of a step below ordination generally in like your ability to perform certain functions. So women can be commissioned, they can't be ordained, which is just splitting hairs. So our conference was like, yeah, they can do the same thing in the Washington conference. So therefore, you know, women are in essence ordained without being officially named ordained.
It's
so we're technically
out of compliance too. It's semantics. It's just semantics.
Yeah, but we're technically out of compliance too, but we're not as bad as you terrible people over in the Southeastern California conference who literally have a female president. Okay. Indeed. So like that's, you guys are the real heretics, and they're not going to come after us anytime soon. So
you guys are safe.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, I mean,
we got you.
We could go on forever about the annual council. But the thing is, in 2015, when they voted on this, people were very discouraged. It reminds me, what just happened a month ago is very similar to what happened in 2015 in the summer when people were just so discouraged about the vote. But it didn't feel like anything changed. Yeah. Did you guys notice any repercussions for that vote? Like everyone, I still saw people graduating with us that got jobs as female pastors. There was no change in our country. I didn't hear any news of anything changing in Europe or necessarily in Asia. I mean, I don't remember hearing any interesting stories.
But that's exactly why all the rest of this has happened, in essence, is because nothing changed.
Nothing changed.
And the GC is like, wait. And I do have to bring up this question, because it does bring up a really interesting dilemma, right? At what point can you say I'm non-compliant and it's okay? Because for instance, like my conference is out of compliance, my union's out of compliance, and our division's out of compliance, right?
Yeah.
So all three of those entities are out of compliance with the GC, right? What if I was just like one day I was like, I want to keep all my tithe money, right? Now money would probably get me, you know, in a hot water a lot faster. But what if I just decided maybe something smaller that was out of compliance with my conference? I mean, technically I could just be like, well, you guys are out of compliance with the GC, you know?
Right, right.
It's kind of like a kid saying to their parent, well, you said it, but you're not doing it, so therefore I won't.
Right. So you know? if you started teaching that, like, that we have immortal souls and there is a hell and
there is a hell
forever,
yeah.
And you're teaching that in evangelistic series as an Adventist pastor.
Yeah, and I could be like, well, you guys are out of compliance, so I can do this too.
Right.
I don't know. It does. I'm not trying to support the GC. I'm just saying it does bring up an interesting question of when is it okay? And how can I still be honestly Adventist and honestly part of an organization and yet completely disagree with the highest level of government?
Yeah, at what point are you accused of apostate? Because that's an interesting thing to bring up, Jesse, because there are certain things that I guess culturally, if you said it in an Adventist church as a pastor or a leader, like that would very quickly lead to losing your job.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's happened. There is precedence for that, which is why people are concerned that this will become that.
Yeah.
That's what I'm getting to, is either at best what Finley is saying is true and nothing will really happen, or this becomes part of the apostate level of Adventism where you will have to leave the church.
Yeah,
I think, sorry, Sean.
No, I'm just saying, like, that's what I'm saying. Those five core things. So homosexuality, I think homosexuality's been used, and we've heard stories, of course, all three of us, of pastors, either if they were homosexual themselves or in support of a homosexual relationship or marriage, whatever it may be, where they've lost their jobs.
Yeah.
Okay, we've seen that, but I don't know if we've seen someone losing their job because they've supported women's ordination. Or just being female themselves. Like, sorry, this is your church? No longer.
Yeah.
You know, like if they walked into your door one Sabbath and they see Chris there and just Pastor Chris and just like, sorry, nope.
Pastor Chris is the female lead pastor of La Sierra.
Yeah, and I should have maybe specified that, especially with Pastor Chris, Ober. So in those circumstances, what are they going to do? That's what it ultimately comes down to. Is that going to be the same level? And like you said, Jesse, if not, then that just becomes even more gray on what's actually allowed.
Sense.
And we're humans, so we're going to find loopholes. We're going to do the whole don't ask, don't tell. This is the thing. What the GC has done is it's breeded more of that culture.
Yeah. Yep.
So at best,
is that the correct form of that?
Bread.
Word?
It's bread.
Bread that feels weird. Yeah,
bread.
I don't even know.
Now I'm hungry.
Anthony, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm forgetting your exact wording, but I think your what you just said is literally and exactly the issue that we're that is happening. It's becoming like an identity. It's becoming an identity and control issue now, mm-hmm. because who gets to decide who's out of compliance and who and once they're out of compliance, what is done? So if it's the GC and Ted Wilson, if they decide someone's out of compliance, can they just bypass church structure and like uh-huh. you're saying, Sean, can they just show up and remove you, Jesse, as a, you know, as a pastor, as a, you know, of a local church, and just say, sorry,
come and get me.
You show up in black suits and like a van. Yeah. Like how does, and
with a
I think
pen that makes you forget everything. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. We're going to erase his memory, boys. And it's like, and I think like what you guys are saying, it's just, I think it's a really, I'm 26. I'll be 27 in 3 weeks. I have far less leadership experience than anyone at the GC, but I feel like it's such a poor leadership move to sow such discord and toxicity amongst yeah. your organization to create all this speculation and to create like this fear mongering. And I feel like it's such a hard thing, right? As a leader, because on one hand you're looking at like, we have an organization and a mission and like goals and belief structure. And we want our organization to represent that well. So we're at the, I almost don't really even think this issue is even about control and power. I almost think it's more about identity. I think it's more about what makes an Adventist and who gets to decide that. So maybe that is
weirdly,
control. Maybe it's a combination.
Weirdly enough, I think it stems from this one very specific thing. How do you read the Bible? Right?
Mm, yeah, yeah.
And it comes like, so it becomes like, is the Bible literal? If Paul said women shouldn't talk in church, then should we take it that way? Or can it be applied to different cultures in different contexts? Mm. And we already do that. Even the people that like yeah. the most conservative, they still do that. But it's like, can we say that we do it, right? So there's that. And the same thing with homosexuality. If the Bible says homosexuality is a sin, can we redefine that? You know, so that, there's that issue. Yeah. Can we redefine what the Bible says? Then that becomes, well, we think that it says this and you think that it says something else.
Interpretation
now,
games.
Who gets to dictate what's true?
Exactly.
Right, which comes back to now what you're saying. And so that's the key issue. And what's terrifying about this whole thing for me personally as a 26-year-old Adventist pastor is how do we come back from this united?
Yeah.
Right?
It's
what steps will be taken that will crazy. Actually like what happens when the GC implement some of this stuff and tries to reprimand or tries to do whatever they want to do to maybe the Pacific Union, which the Southeastern California Conference is part of. What happens then? Because the Pacific Union is not going to be like, oh, you called us on it. Sorry. I'm so sorry. Right. All of these years, we're going to fire all of our female pastors. We're going to re-vote to have someone in the Southeastern California Conference be a president other than the president now. Like, no, that's not going to happen.
Right,
right,
exactly. Yeah.
And the GC's not going to sit there and be like, oh, you're not going to back down? Oh, sorry. Oh, I'm so sorry. Like, maybe we just won't even worry about it. That's not happening. Right yeah. now, a battle's happening, and it's irreversible unless someone's willing to back down. And that's what's scary to me, is like, what is the path forward from here? Because at some point, yeah. theoretically, yeah. and this is going around, that people are worried about this, not from like leaders or, but this is going around where people are concerned. The only option becomes we split off, you know, yeah. like those non-compliant entities split off, and nobody wants that, but the GC is almost forcing it in that direction. And yeah. then we become just like every other Protestant church that's like fractured. Like you get the Baptist and the Southern Baptist, you yeah. know, we're going to have the Adventist and the Western American Adventist type of thing.
Yeah. I have some friends in the Calvary Chapel denomination, and they were just telling me a few months ago that their church just went through a
really?
Denominational split. Like it just happened like last year in 2017. I think
no
I could
way.
Be misquoting the past couple of years. And it was really crazy and traumatic. And that's like all they could talk about. And so we could relate. Cause I was like, yeah, our church is like, we're coming up on like some really tense times where that could be a potential. But what I wanted to respond to, Jesse, is I'm really curious about like what are the conversations happening? Like have Ted Wilson and Dan Jackson been in a room together and had a conversation and been like, hey, I love you. Like like we're brothers in Christ. Can we, is there a way to like I'm always curious
so.
About that. Like is there ever, is it just all in meetings and bureaucracy and just I like I'm
That's what I'm always the most curious about. Is it all, are they all just, you know, like one entity sends a letter and another entity sends a letter, and yeah. or there's just like a meeting and one sees, you know, and I know it's not Dan and Ted who are like, who may have all the power and make all the decisions, but like, have their teams like had conversations? And I'm assuming so, but has there
ever
been?
You would hope so. And you would hope that it would have been in the vein that you're talking about, where it's like, hey, we're all brothers in Christ here, brothers and sisters in Christ. What can we do to move forward? But that's, right. but the terrifying thing here, and this is what scares me about this mentality, is once you get into a control mentality, once you get into this place where it's like, you're wrong, right? Now you become, in essence, apostate.
Right.
And therefore, you're I can the enemy. Treat you differently because of that. Yes, I can treat you as an enemy. Maybe I'm not going to like attack you with force, but like I can just in my head quantify you or categorize you as someone who is against me. And the minute that happens, it's all out the window. And like, I'm not trying to say that has happened. I'm just saying that is the easiest thing that could happen in someone's heart based on the direction that all of this is going. And that's not good. And that's not the way that I think. Like, I think it's so crazy when we read an Acts where it's at Paul, he's, or is it an Acts, or where does he talk about it? Where he's talking about how Peter is he's with all of the Gentiles, and then some Jewish people show up, and he's like, oh, shoot, and he goes off and sequesters himself with the Jewish people
Acts.
For fear of being judged. And Paul's like, I challenged him to his face. Right, but
so good.
But here's what's crazy about it is that there was obviously a greater understanding of love and a greater understanding of unity there than we have currently. Because right now it's not challenging to your face, and then they're like, oh yeah, man, that's true, or we really need to rethink what we're doing. It's like, yeah, we hear your challenges, we're going to keep going.
And that's what I'm wondering, has there even ever been a challenge to the face? Has there ever been a conversation with both teams in the room? And that's where I feel where I'm questioning healthy leadership, because I feel like this is for any like millennial, for any young adult who's professional, who is educated and is invested in the church professionally. I feel like as we like, there's plenty of other places we could work. You know, a lot of us have other talents, skills, abilities, whatever, not trying to be boastful, but just saying like, there's plenty of other places we could work. We don't have to work for the church. We're here because we feel like Adventism is home and this is where God has called us to be. But me speaking for all young professionals in the church for a second, but at least that's for me. I'll speak for myself. But I feel like as we look, like there's so many examples of great, positive, healthy, strong leaders in the world that you can look at. And then when we come to our own church organization, I feel like when we look at our own leadership, it's like, man, like, you know, like for me, as I'm striving to be a better leader in my context, I'm like, man, like this is violating so many leadership principles. This is like, you know, it's like looking at the opposite of a James Maxwell book, and I'm just trying
the opposite, how not to lead. Yeah.
How not. And I'm just like, has there ever been a point where the GC team had a weekend retreat with, you know, every division leader, and they're just like, okay guys, we have this issue. How do we figure out how we're all on the same page?
Here's the thing though, too, like, is that it's not just the GC versus the NAD or the European Union.
Right.
That's
true.
It's also, we have South America and Africa and some of the other divisions who are staunchly against it. And so,
so
this
let's
is not
get
just
everyone
a,
in the room. And that's what I'm like, man, can we get everyone in the room and can we all have a conversation? And I know you're from this other place that has a different cultural context, but can you at least have the empathy to see as an adult and educated person?
Here's the thing though, is I can have empathy on you as long as it's within my belief system as a Christian. So for instance, if I say, Anthony, like you're smoking, what a bad habit you have, right? But I can have empathy for you because like I don't believe that that is separating you from God in its fullest extent, right? I don't believe that. So I can have empathy and say, I don't think it's healthiest for you, but I think we can come to an agreement on, hey, you love Jesus too, right?
Right.
The problem is if I believe that if you like if I look at you, Anthony, and you say that hell exists, like immediately I'm like, dude, that's not true, and I can't agree with that at all. And that's what's happening at that level, I think, and it's happening across America versus other places. It's just like, listen, I can't get on your level. I can't, not even like there's a higher level than the other, I just can't get on your space because I don't believe what you believe. And as soon as that happens, like there's this level of like, you're an apostate. Either side is like, you're an apostate. You're against progress, or you're against being biblical, and therefore it's over. So, but I do want to say, I want to say this before we end.
Yeah.
at the local church level, I've heard like a ton of people say, man, I'm so disappointed. I don't even want to be a part of this organization anymore, yeah. All this stuff. And I will say this, that the local church, right? At least there's a lot of local churches that don't even care about this. Like, I'm going to be honest, and I happen to be in a place where we are non-compliant. We do have women pastors. They're some of the most amazing people that I've had the opportunity to work with.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about this decision. And if something goes down, okay, it goes down. But the reality is that it doesn't change my local mission. It doesn't change the local mission of the Adventist who goes to church every week. It doesn't. And I think we have to understand that we can't use, you know, a bunch of bad leaders at a certain level as an excuse for us five layers away to be like, oh, I'm not going to be part of this church anymore. Yeah. I do have to say that because I think that's a terrible excuse. No matter how disappointing it is, I think it's a terrible excuse.
I want to agree with you, Jesse, and also come against you at the same time.
Okay.
And I know we're trying to wrap up here. Sean, if you want to interject at any point, please do.
Don't. You're out, Sean. We don't even love you.
Who's Sean? Oh, man.
He doesn't even respond.
But he's there. He's listening. Sean, you have such a cute wounded look on your face.
I'm waiting for you to start getting on your train of thought so I can take you off that train of thought.
Oh, there we go.
That's a great strategy. Okay, here, I'm going straight in. So I agree with you, Jesse, and I would say around our spaces down here, I don't want to speak for anyone but myself, but for around our spaces, I think that's a similar mentality. In general, at least for me, I'm not really interested or super invested in what's going on, and I think a lot of the people in our spaces are continuing in kind of the similar mentality that we're just like, it doesn't really affect us in the moment. We're just going to continue loving people locally and doing, you know, continuing mission. But I think on the other hand, for me as an Adventist person in the world, I think it just makes it that much harder. It's just added baggage for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that.
It's just added baggage. And how it's like, how much more now do I want to tell someone, a non-Christian, that I'm an Adventist and say, hey, you should come to my church and you should become an Adventist. And then they're like, okay, cool. And then they just Google Adventism and this is what they find. It's like, it's just more baggage.
I don't even think you're going to find all of that if you Google Adventism. And the other thing too, though, is, because I agree with you, but also I think the other thing too is, what if using like all of that as an excuse, like baggage? Yeah. I get that. But like, so every church has had baggage for the entirety of its experience. Even like the most successful churches have baggage, it's right? True. And so it's like, if we use baggage as an excuse to be like, I don't feel like inviting someone to my church. If you have a crappy local church, I get it, right? But if your local church is like moving forward, seeking to follow Jesus, on mission with him, like you don't have an excuse. And I don't mean to be harsh, like as a pastor, I get very frustrated because I'm like, that's not a good excuse. It's just kind of like it's easier to be frustrated and be mad about something than it is to do something about it.
That's true.
And so, if I can't change, what's that?
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, the last thing is, if I can't change what the GC is going to do, I might as well just do what Jesus is going to do where I am, you know, and not worry about it.
I'll be fast, Sean. As a pastor, I 100% agree with you, and my heart is split. So as a pastor, I 100% agree with you, and I think as long, you know, if the local church is reflecting Jesus locally, then you should totally feel comfortable inviting people to your church. I think that in my conversations with people who didn't grow up Adventist, who don't have attachment to the family of faith like we do, I think it's a lot easier for us to say like, oh yeah, that's just someone up there in some ivory tower doing something. But I think for a lot of people in circles that I'm in with non-believing people, that's like the number one reason. It's the organization who I represent with a label. And so when someone who didn't grow up Adventist is going to say, yeah, I'm going to adopt this label and say, I am an Adventist, I think that adds a whole nother layer of baggage for me to say, yeah. It's like me saying, I work for Trump. That's what I do. And not trying to compare the two. It's just, it comes with an ideology and a person that it represents, you know? And I think for a lot of people, at least in conversations with people, that's what I hear a lot is like, I'm not interested in representing what that is. Sean, go for it.
Yeah, I think it ultimately comes down to the fact that this is a complex issue. This is not simple. And so just because the Annual Council and the General Conference all voted to have these things done, it's going to be a very difficult process. And and when it comes down to how we react to it, I think it's also multi-layered. And so I see both Jesse's side and your side, Anthony, in this way. I think we shouldn't leave the church just based on challenges or disagreements, even depending obviously on what those disagreements are. If it prevents me from authentically worshiping Jesus and spreading the gospel, that's an issue to leave. And so if we get to that point, but that's something you've got to be prayerful about. I mean, Martin Luther did not originally want to leave the Catholic Church, but yeah. He recognized the lack of mission and the corruption there, right? So there is that side. But I also think we should have almost that attitude of Martin Luther, which was seek to heal the church in every way possible before you even entertain that idea. Mm. You know, are we trying to bring healing to the church like Paul was and bring healing to a new church that was fractured on certain issues? And if that's our intention, I think our heart's in the right place. And for those listening, you have to pray individually, but also corporately, maybe in your local church in a way that you're just thinking of, what am I doing that's healing? And maybe that does mean you go to your conference or you go and you, I don't know what the actions would be, but you think about ways to be face-to-face with someone that is a leader and say, hey, this is not okay, right? Yeah. There may be a place for that. Maybe we need to set a precedence for that. But I think, like I said, it's multi-layered. But I think it needs to start from a place of humility and recognizing I may not have the whole picture on this. Do I feel uncomfortable with what the GC has voted on? Absolutely. But maybe there truly is a perspective and a point of view that I just have not seen yet. And maybe it's just too complicated for me to understand at this present moment. So if I go into a conversation with an attitude like, hey, I want to learn from you. Mm. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
We all want to promote healing in the gospel, right? If that's our goal, then we're a part of the same church. It doesn't matter to me after that. So that's just kind of my final thought.
I love it, Sean. I think that's a good place to end. Humility, learning from each other, and remembering the gospel. Good, man. Good things. Well, everyone, thanks again for joining us for another episode of Seeking What They Sought. It has been an awesome time discussing a really challenging topic, but we are continuing to look forward to the future. And thanks for joining us. We will see you next time on Seeking What They Sought.